to the Max, a podcast for leaders and entrepreneurs. Hosted by Fiefma Krammer.
Hi everyone. In this episode, I'm going to interview Timothy Pitchell, or Dr. Procrastination. He's an associate professor in the Department of Psychology at Carleton University, Canada. The director of the Center for Initiatives in Education and has a cross appointment to the School of Linguistics and Language Studies. His research in psychology is focused on procrastination and its relation to well-being. He's a winner of numerous teaching awards and wrote books and published a lot of articles. I have deep respect for Tim, because despite the fact that he is currently recovering from cancer, he was more than willing to share us his enormous knowledge. One of his books is called Solving the Procrastination Puzzle, a concise guide to strategies for change. And I hope we will put some pieces of this puzzle together in this episode. Have fun. With us today, we have Timothy Pitchell. So that's a good pronunciation, isn't it?
That is. It's Pitchell like Mitchell, yes.
Yes. And are you okay with calling you Tim or Timothy?
Tim. I was going to say, you can call me Tim. I write Timothy on my published papers just because that was my given name. But okay. I go by Tim.
Okay, Tim. Welcome to the Meet the Max podcast. I'm very happy to be able to join me today and speak about procrastination. And I think we all recognize the situation where we know exactly what we have to do that day. In my case, do my taxes or do my administration. And then I look at myself in the morning and I say, well, today you're going to do the taxes or administration, whatever. And it's at period. But, you know, Tim, during the day, well, I have all kinds of excuses. And some of them are quite good, I must say. So, for example, somebody is calling me and it's really interesting and important call. My dog is running away, so I have to get him back. It takes some time, of course. It's snowing that day and I decide to pick up my daughter from school. So, before I know it, the day is over and I didn't do what I wanted to do. And I can feel guilty about it, but after listening to your podcast, I Procrastinate podcast, it's a great podcast, I wasn't that guilty anymore, because I discovered in one of your episodes that there are different kinds, and we sometimes think we procrastinate, but we don't. Mm-hmm. So, shall we first start with the definition of procrastination?
Yes, that's a great place to start, Fief. And thank you for inviting me to your podcast. So you're absolutely right that I'm fond of saying, although all procrastination is delay, not all delay is procrastination. Mm. So procrastination is defined by researchers in the area as the voluntary delay of an intended action, despite expecting to be worse off for that delay. So it by definition, it's inherently irrational. But there's all sorts of other kinds of delay in our lives, like purposeful delay. We have practical reason that we exercise every day. And my practical reason could say, I'm going to put this off because there's something more important to do. Mm. And there's an inevitable delay. Like we set up this podcast for this morning, but had something come up with my family life, which is always happening. It's inevitable because I have role conflict. I might have to make a change. Yep. It's similar to purposeful delay, but it's not so much based on practical reason as it is to the circumstances in life. It's a little bit like expecting planes to be late, I suppose. Mm. And then there's also another category, like I'll just do one more, which is delay due to emotional problems. So yep. You know, after my father died, it's my typical example, although I can think of many others. But in that case, I was very sad, of course. We were best of friends. And as much as he was an older man, and that's inevitable, it was a big loss. And so for a while, things didn't get done. But never did I impugn myself with the word procrastination, because I wasn't procrastinating. I was struggling with emotional issues. And I think it is important to know the difference. And that's what it sounds like you did when you started to look at some of the delay in your own life.
Yeah, yeah. So if you analyze my situation, would you consider it a procrastination?
Well, you didn't tell me enough about your situation. If you said to me that you're going to do your taxes today and you didn't, it starts to smell like procrastination, I have to tell you.
Okay. So there are different sides of procrastination, of course. And I know your research is about 20 years already. You're doing
this. Yes, nearly 25 now since I actually turned my attention.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh, and it's of course a subject it's a never ending study, I believe.
It is. I think so. And people often ask me, are you still studying that? And I said, yes, it's infinitely fascinating why we become our own worst enemy.
Yeah, that's true.
And I would add that what really hooks me into this is that it's a deeply existential issue in the sense that time is the only non-renewable resource that you and I have in our lives. And we don't even know how much of it we're going to get.
Yep.
And so not to live my own life effectively, I don't mean to be a better employee necessarily, but I mean to achieve the things that I want to achieve, that's problematic. And I think that's why most people really resonate to that. And they say, yeah, why do I become my own worst enemy?
Yeah.
And so I struggle to understand that. I think we have some idea, but like all research, it's always penultimate. One question leads to another. Yeah.
Yeah. So why do we procrastinate at such a large scale? If we know that life is short, we only have limited time, and we never know when life is ending.
Mm-hmm.
So why do we do it?
Well, I would say, and this is where there is a little dispute amongst colleagues that study procrastination. Some who follow behavioral economics try to make it a utility issue, that we discount future rewards and we take sooner rewards, and it has to do with this notion of utility. But I'd argue that we need to understand it from an emotional perspective. So this is how I see procrastination working. When you face a task that evokes from you some sort of negative emotion, and it could be something like boredom or frustration or resentment or anxiety, there are many. But when you feel that emotion, it's not pleasant. And it's human nature not to want to feel negative emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So we seek to cope. And so how do we cope? Well, avoidance works. If I avoid the task, I avoid the negative emotion, at least in the short term. So present self wins, future self loses. But it's powerfully rewarding in the short term, and that's why we end up doing it. And so I think that's the short explanation of why we procrastinate. We call it the priority of mood repair. We're trying to make ourselves feel better now. And it kind of works, but then it doesn't, because you even started off by talking about the fact that you can feel guilt sometimes.
Yeah,
and of course.
True.
That's a primary emotion. That's why we procrastinate. We give in to feel good, as some of my American colleagues wrote in a very important paper.
Okay. So to speak about guilt, because I know there was a research done about feeling guilty in combination with procrastination. And that was a very interesting study. It was a study done by students. It seemed that people who felt guilty about procrastination would procrastinate even more than people who are more mild to each other.
Well, we did one study. This was published in 2010 with one of my colleagues, Michael Wall. I think this is a study you're speaking of. It was about self-forgiveness.
Okay.
Michael knows a lot about forgiveness. And one day he said to me, you know, we should do a study on forgiveness and procrastination. And I said, we can, Michael, but I think it'll be forgive and forget. And he said, don't be so sure. And I was quite sure. In any case, we didn't find that at all. And I think this is what you're alluding to, that we use students, as we often do in the academic context. So that comes with some limitations, of course. And it is a single study, but I think it's indicative of a process. So in this case, we had students who procrastinated on preparing for their first examination and did poorly. And within that group, some of them forgave themselves for procrastinating and some didn't. And it was the group who forgave themselves for procrastinating at time one that when it came for time two exam, they procrastinated less. And I said, Michael, how does that work? Like, I thought it was going to be forgive and forget. He said, well, imagine you had a transgression with FIF, like you didn't show up for the interview today. Mm-hmm. What would be the motivation? Well, I would want to avoid FIF. Uh-huh. And what would happen if she forgave you? What would be the motivation then? Well, then it would be approach. He said, exactly. And he said, that's how forgiveness works. Now, with procrastination, he argues, the transgression is against the self. And unless we forgive ourselves, we add just another level of avoidance in there. Yeah. And it makes it even more difficult for us to go forward. So self-forgiveness seems pretty obvious, but my colleague at the University of Sheffield, Fuchsia Sirwa, argues that we really need to broaden that to self-compassion. Yeah. We really have to accept our common humanity because, you know, the more we talk about procrastination, the more obvious it becomes that we are predictably rational. Our brains are wired in strange ways to prefer the short-term reward, to seek that dopamine rush. And so we have to accept that this is part of our human nature. Now, it doesn't mean it's our destiny, but we have to understand that we have to be strategic to overcome it because it is a propensity to say, oh, I'd rather have fun now.
Yeah, yeah. So it's all about avoidance. And you say, if you don't forgive yourself, well, it puts an extra layer on the avoidance.
Yes. Remember, I said that we procrastinate because of these negative emotions. Yeah. So now when you think about that first exam without any forgiveness, you have all this self-loathing, even shame. I mean, guilt can transfer into shame because you feel like I don't belong at this university. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing my work. And so unless you can let go of that, all those negative emotions, you're going to want to avoid those too. And so you run away from it again. So I think it's worth repeating. Procrastination is an emotion-focused coping response. It's using avoidance to make ourselves feel better. And so anything that makes us feel worse is going to contribute to our procrastination, potentially at least. Because that's our go-to response. And of course, then the other thing about procrastination is it quickly becomes a habit. School is just such an unnatural act for, I think, for everyone personally, but even amongst people who like school, the fact that they can pull it off at the last minute, that they have to do assignments that aren't intrinsically interesting to them, that what happens is that very early in life, you learn to procrastinate and it becomes a habit. And that's very challenging.
Yeah, that's true. Because I know a lot of people say, well, I work best when I'm under pressure. Oh. I put things off until the last moment. And I know some people say that's the best way. But what do you have to say about this? What's your advice? And do you think it's true that some people really perform better when they put it off and wait till the end, till the last moment?
I think we can all remember a moment when we did that and it worked for us. But on the whole, we don't find that. In research, we find that people make more errors of omission and commission under pressure. Mm-hmm. But we've gone in search of what we call the arousal procrastinator, the person who thinks that they like the pressure. Mm-hmm. In fact, what we find is that it doesn't, procrastination doesn't relate to things like sensation seeking, which is a personality trait, or extroversion, which is also arousal based. And instead, what we see is that people use this to make themselves feel better. Mm. What we see in our lives is that we don't work better under pressure. We only work under pressure. And what we don't appreciate is the pathos with that, that we need someone to light a fire under our butt. Now, I've made many public presentations on procrastination, and I made one in Toronto, and here in Canada, Toronto is one of our larger cities, and it was an interesting general audience, and I spoke to this, and afterwards, a musician came up to me, and he said, you're absolutely right. You know, if you're a composer, and he sent me some work from a composer, you have to show up, and good writers know this as well. You can't wait for the muse to be there or the pressure to build. What you have to do is you have to show up and put in that disciplined work. And and that's, so when we use this notion of that I work better under pressure, we're typically just trying to solve the cognitive dissonance we feel, that tension we feel between the intention we had and the inaction that we're involved in. That intention-action gap is at the heart of procrastination, of course.
Yeah. You discover that procrastination has various effect on us, not only mental, but also the physical way.
Yes. In fact, I have to credit Fuchsia Sirwa at the University of Sheffield for all of this. She was a graduate student at my university, Carleton University in Ottawa, and she was doing health psychology, but she took a seminar with me on teaching. And afterwards she said, you know, I'd like to do some research with you on procrastination. That was such a gift to me because she's such a gifted researcher. And so she put together a study that built on a study that was published in 1997 by Roy Baumeister and Diane Tice about the effects or the relation between procrastination and health. Mm-hmm. But it really, it was a very important study because it was the first, but it wasn't very theoretically strong. What Fuchsia brought to the table is a theoretical approach to understanding why we might see a relation between procrastination and health. Yep. She did a longitudinal study, which she's replicated, to show that, yes, when we procrastinate, it's related to poor health outcomes. And what she shows us is that one of the reasons is a direct effect of stress. Procrastination causes stress, which, you know, undermines our immune system and does all those other negative things we know about stress. But procrastinators are also unique in that the way we can contribute to a poorer health is through fewer wellness behaviors.
Yeah.
I'll eat better tomorrow. I'll exercise more tomorrow. I'll sleep better later. In fact, we have Dutch colleagues who have studied sleep procrastination quite specifically because we can put off going to bed, for example. But we know that putting off any of these health behaviors undermines our health. And then the other indirect route can be through treatment delay. Oh yeah, I've noticed this mole on me. I'll get that looked after later. So, you know, a lot of us think that, oh, procrastination, what's the big deal? It's just a matter of a few all-nighters. In fact, no, it has more deleterious consequences than just performance. And in fact, when you look at the research on what's the relation between academic performance and procrastination, the effect size isn't that big and in the aggregate. So overall, we might see a 0.19, minus 0.19 effect size for those of you who like statistics. In other words, it's a small to moderate effect. Not everyone who procrastinates does poorly. Now, that's the aggregate. I know because I've been doing this research for 25 years and I'm quite public with it. I get emails from people from all over the world that tell me they're going to get kicked out of school. They're going to lose their job. So when it gets to be chronic, it can be very serious for us performance-wise too. But to answer your question again, yeah, it does affect our health. And Fuchsia Sirwa has done some wonderful work on this.
Yeah. Because I think putting off sleep or going to bed, I think a lot of people, I know a lot of people who do that.
Yes.
So they procrastinate in general, but also procrastinate when they're going to sleep.
I just want to watch one more show. The procrastinator's song is this: I don't want to, I don't feel like it. I'll feel more like it later. And it can be with bed too. I don't want to go to bed. We act like children, right? Yeah. The 6-year-old is alive and well in us. And actually, I'd really encourage you to interview Joel Anderson at Utrecht, who is involved in this study, but is also really knowledgeable about procrastination overall. Delightful scholar. And he's a philosopher.
Okay. So if you look at the effects on ourselves mentally and physically, then you can say, well, do we have any tips to get out of that procrastination trap?
So there are, and I'm gonna give a few, but I want to add one more thing before I go there. Some German colleagues a year or two ago did an fMRI study, functional magnetic resonance imaging. So we look for blood flow patterns in the brain to see We can look at anatomy. We can look at what parts of the brain we think are responsible for things because they're active. Reminding ourselves that it's all correlational, not causal. Mm-hmm. But what they demonstrated was that people who procrastinated more frequently, you can call them chronic procrastinators, but they just self-report more frequent procrastination, they had a larger amygdala. Now, the amygdala is that part of the limbic system that's known for fight or flight. It works with the hippocampus when we're learning to encode emotion. Mm-hmm. And so it really does, at a physiological level, speak to this notion that, gee, there's something going on with emotion here. And Fuchsia and I like to call this the amygdala hijack, that what's happening with procrastination is that you're having this emotional response to a task and you're coping by getting away. Mm-hmm. I wanted to add that because, of course, a woman at the University of Pittsburgh, amongst others, her name's Taryn, has done some research on mindfulness meditation, but there's much more than that, just that. But I'm thinking of her study in particular because she showed that even just 8 weeks of mindfulness meditation can actually decrease the volume of the amygdala and change the connections to the prefrontal cortex.
Yes, I read about it.
Yeah, our brain is very plastic.
Yeah.
So biology isn't destiny, although it does help us understand that, sure, what's happening here is the primacy of emotion and emotional repair.
Yeah.
So when you ask me for a tip, I'd say it's always beneficial for us to become more mindful, and particularly this next phrase, to develop a non-judgmental attitude towards our emotions. So, for example, I can have fear without being my fear, or I can have boredom without being my boredom. I can say, yes, I really hate this task. I find it incredibly boring and I resent doing it. But that doesn't mean I can't move forward. I have that emotion. I can watch that emotion without being that emotion. Mm. Now, that said, the problem with that tip is that's going to take a while, right? That's a skill that you have to develop.
Yeah.
So let's take a situation like you were talking about. Today, I'm going to do my taxes. Mm-hmm. And today comes and your whole body's screaming, I don't want to. I don't feel like it.
Yeah.
So my number one tip, and I use it every day myself, it's something that keeps me moving, especially on the things that I don't want to do, is it really comes from David Allen. And I know David's been in the Netherlands working with some of the colleagues at Utrecht, consulting with them in terms of his work on getting stuff done.
Yep.
And what David argues is that we don't do projects, we do actions. And so from my own research, I learned that getting started was really crucial. It's not the Nike slogan of just do it. It's just get started.
Yeah. Take the first step, you mean?
Yes. But then I had people write to me and say, Dr. Pitchell, if I could get started, I wouldn't have a procrastination problem. Can you do better than that, please? And in fact, David Allen has already done better than that, in the sense of you have to ask yourself, this is a magic question. What's the next action?
Yeah.
And keep that action as low as threshold as possible. And so it may be that I need to just sit down and put the box of receipts that I need to sort in front of me. I can do that.
Yeah, oh, I tried it because I bought your book, Procrastination Puzzle. And I tried it because I had to do some research about something and I just postponed it the whole time or procrastinated. And then I thought, well, I'm going to use the tip of a small action to start with. So I was just saying, well, I would like to work with it now. You know, before I didn't want to, but when I took one little step, I just wanted to do it. So that's a very good tip.
It's huge. In fact, I find it to be life-changing. And I often tell people when I give these public talks, I say, there are things I'm going to say today that can be life-changing if you want them to be. It's a simple thing. And it's not easy. Like, to say to yourself, what's the next action, means I have to step up. Yeah. But ultimately, it primes the pump. It's the next step. And you know, there's some ancient Zen wisdom that it reflects very well. I studied Zen as a young man, and all sorts of other interesting philosophies. But I remember a story, a Zen koan, about a young man seeking enlightenment. And he went to the master and said, what should I do? And he said, have you finished eating your rice? He said, yes, then wash your bowl. And that's just so powerful. About, like you're making too much of it here. And if you can grasp that, you realize that, quite literally, many people procrastinate in washing their dishes, right? They say, oh, I don't want to. Of course you don't want to. Like, there's no necessarily joy in it unless you can change your mindset. But once you get started, you realize this only takes a few minutes.
It's a piece of cake, then you say.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, David Allen has this notion of a 2-minute rule. If it's only going to take 2 minutes, just do it right now and get it done. Don't let it linger. And those are powerful, powerful tips. Yeah. Now, another tip that you asked for tips, another one comes from a German psychologist who's in the U.S. His name is Peter Gollwitzer. And Gollwitzer writes about implementation intentions. We all have goal intentions. Our goal might be to get my taxes done, as you talked about. But you need an implementation intention, which takes the form of when then. Mm. When I finish this interview, then I'm going to get out that box of receipts and sort them into things that are tax deductible and things that aren't. Just that first step. When then? It puts the cue for action into the environment, and it helps us break habits, because otherwise we just fall back on what we internally feel, as opposed to signaling, no, the interview's over, now I have to do this other thing. So implementation intentions can be very powerful that way. And so it's yet another technique.
So it's a sort of a prescription you make for yourself?
All the time. In fact, I wasn't flossing my teeth. I tell this story way too much, but I floss my teeth all the time now. But I wasn't flossing my teeth, even though my dentist told me I really needed to. And partly it was because I couldn't remember. And there's a whole bunch of psychology goes behind this. But in fact, all I had to do was, I had a habit to brush my teeth. So here's my implementation intention. When I pick up my toothbrush, I'll put the floss on the counter. And when I put down the toothbrush, then I'll pick up the floss. You see, I put a cue in there.
Yeah.
Now, there's something called event segmentation theory that basically says, make sure you do this in the context of something that makes sense. Like, don't say, when I towel myself off, then I'm going to floss my teeth, because they just don't fit together naturally. There needs to be some semblance of what's already happening in your life. It should fit in. But when then? It is so powerful and such a simple technique that I highly recommend it. But if I always have to go back to one technique, it's always, what's the next action? And let me just add one more thing there to that, what's the next action?
Mm-hmm.
The reason it's so powerful is that I told you that procrastination is about this focus on emotions, this wanting to feel good now. But if I ask myself, what's the next action? I'm taking my attention inadvertently, I'm nudging my attention away from my emotions. And now what I'm thinking about is, what's the next action? And as you said, once you make that action, a little bit of progress fuels your motivation. Mm. Don't ask your motivation to fuel your action. Turn it around.
Mm.
And when you think about a pump, for example, take an old-fashioned water pump. You can pump the handle up and down all you want. Nothing's going to happen. Put in a little water to prime it, and it works effortlessly after that. And I think we have to think of that metaphor in our own work. Once we prime the pump, typically we're off to the races.
Yeah. So can you say that if you follow your emotions, then most of the times we will avoid things, especially when it's negative emotion, of course. And if you focus yourself a little bit more on the action or a step, then you will be more in your prefrontal cortex?
Yes. I mean, it is. We always have these dualisms in psychology, and it's been there since Freud even, right? The id versus the superego, moderated by the ego, of course. But, and then there's the thinking fast, thinking slow. And really, that's what I'm talking about too. The prefrontal cortex or executive function and the limbic system emotions. It is more complex than that, but we are seeing evidence that in fact, our emotions are very quick. And if we react emotionally and it's negative, as you say, we typically want to run away. And so we need strategies. In fact, with many of my students, they'll tell me how they're freaking out and they say, what should I do? Well, I'd say the first volitional skill, the skill of will that you need, is you need to learn to breathe deeply. If you can just sit still for a few minutes and take 5 or 6 really deep breaths, your whole body is going to relax, and that's going to give your prefrontal cortex a chance to kick in and start to do some serious thinking, as opposed to just reacting, fight or flight sort of thing.
Yeah.
So all of these things, it's a toolkit. Mm. And so sometimes the first thing I have to do is take a deep breath or even take a walk. And then I bring myself back and say, what's the next action?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's not one trick at one point, but honestly, I must say, what's the next action 10 times a day? Because I need to jumpstart the fact that, oh, here's another task I don't want to do. But once I get started, I'm okay.
Yeah. Well, I remember one thing I read, maybe in your book or somewhere else, is that you said, well, if we procrastinate, we're not following through with our own lives.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. I mean, that's what keeps me interested in this, that in every world religion, we seem to have this notion of sloth as a some sort of sin, if we want to use that word. And it's not an unusual word for just about any religion, to waste time, that precious commodity, not to live up to our full potential. Yeah. In fact, another way we often think about this is agency, to recognize this is my life. This is not a dress rehearsal. Why isn't I'm not embracing the things that I think I want to do or accomplish? Well, you know, there's so many people who've written about how fear gets in the way. And you'll read about people who have near-death experiences, and it just kind of changes them. It galvanizes them to recognize that, yeah, life is short. This is precious. Let's get on with it. Yep. Even Viktor Frankl, who lost just about everything he ever found precious in the Nazi concentration camps, wrote in his own autobiography about procrastination. And he said he learned to do the more difficult things first when he had the energy. And he learned not to leave these things lingering. So he had more time for the more important things in life, with like relationships and other people. So yeah, of course, it's a deeply existential issue, not living our lives to our fullest. Yep. I think that's why most people are interested in it.
Yeah, that's true. So if you talk about research and this subject, it's going on. And what is the most recent research at this moment?
Well, there's so much. In fact, I'm reading a thesis out of Australia right now, a dissertation for a PhD. So I'm getting to read some of the stuff that's not even close to being published yet, some that's just been published. People are still asking some very basic questions. It depends on what part of the world you're talking about. There's different traditions. Okay. So we have people still asking questions about, so does utility explain procrastination? Is it really value times expectancy that is the issue here? And then other people are doing more work on emotion regulation. Mm. So all of these things are still at the forefront of our research. I'd like to see more focus on this dichotomy between present self and future self. Mm. We've seen the work of Hal Hirschfield of UCLA is really important in this regard, but we need more research in that regard in terms of procrastination. We discount future self and we put future self in a really tough spot. So what can we do? How can we do a little bit of time travel to develop more empathy for future self? So present self says, yeah, this isn't such a good idea. I need to get started. Because it's understanding that future self is me, right? That, and again, that's why we're predictably irrational. We treat future self like some stranger.
Yeah, that's true. Because it is, I remember there was a research done that they really looked in the brain and where the blood was going when you think about yourself and think about what you like to accomplish.
Yes. We actually process information about future self in areas of the brain where we process information about a stranger. And mm-hmm. it's different than the areas of the brain that are processing information about present self.
Oh, yeah.
So, that's interesting correlational research again. But what it says to us is that there's something fundamentally different about the way we think about future self. And we don't treat strangers very well. And we're treating future self like a stranger. Oh, future self can deal with it. Actually, no. Future self's going to be under more pressure. And wake up and smell the coffee here. Future self is you. But we're so busy trying to rationalize at the moment, whether that's I work better under pressure or it's not that important or I have lots of time. All those things are just to reduce cognitive dissonance right now. So, yeah, I think that's a really fascinating area of study that's deserving of more focus. I can't really talk about this dissertation right now because this person will want to publish it without other people doing the research. Mm-hmm. But lots of I just this morning I got asked to review a couple other studies. So there's lots being done. It's proliferating in many respects.
Great, great. Yeah. So that's the reason why you're still researching in procrastination, I assume.
Partly, but partly it's because for me and throughout my career, research is a way of teaching. You see, I value the university of as a place where young people go to learn, and research becomes a way of learning. And it's the great thing between us in a sense. Parker Palmer writes about the great thing between the teacher and the student is learning. And so for me, the great thing between the teacher and the student is this research project. Ooh. And so I continue to do research in so many ways because it's a way of teaching. Honestly, sometimes I think if I was left on my own, I wouldn't necessarily do the research because it's a dynamic thing, right?
Yeah. So that's there. Yeah, great. Well, I think I can say thank you very much for sharing so much important information with us. And I really enjoyed having you in my Meet the Max podcast. And I know you've written two books. One of them is what I just mentioned, Procrastination Puzzle.
Mm-hmm. That's the one that I think is most accessible. I wrote it to be very, very short. You could read it in an hour or two. The chapters are 3 or 4 pages. I really just try to get to the heart of the matter. The other books, actually, there's two other edited books. The most recent with Fuchsia Sirwa in 2016 on procrastination, health, and well-being. But it's written more for scholars. And it's I have some chapters in there, but there's also chapters written by other scholars. And then a much earlier book was Counseling the Procrastinator in the Academic Setting. It may be of interest to those people working in universities and colleges, but that was an edited book with colleagues from the U.S., the Netherlands, and Canada. That was an interesting volume. But again, those edited books are more for scholars in the area or counselors. If you're struggling with that, then the Solving the Procrastination Puzzle is that book. And if you don't want to go out and buy a book, well, if you go to procrastination.ca, you'll see my blog and my podcast. Yeah. And although I'm not doing it very much, Fief, now, right now, because I told you I was just recovering from a cancer and I'm just kind of mentally getting myself used to this new life I'm living. Mm-hmm. But there's tons of content there. And all the things we've talked about, you know, you can listen to interviews with the scholars I've mentioned. You can deep dive into some of the literature, and it's all free.
Yeah, I know. It's because you started your podcast in 2008. So you're one of the first.
Actually, 2006. Because it was 2005 in the fall when podcasting sort of came to life, and I started researching it then. I was very excited about it, and I think I put out my first podcast. Now, I warn all listeners, when you go there, that was the early days of podcasting, and my audio is horrible, and I tried all sorts of different microphones. But if you can look past that or listen past that, the content is still solid. I interviewed some very... Interesting.
I listened to one of them, and I think it's a great content. So I would really advise everybody to listen. I'm glad hearing that the book of Procrastination Puzzle is not too difficult. And don't take that long to read, because I know I have it myself. I also have that sometimes, that I say, well, I first have to read a book about it, and then afterwards I will do what I have to do. And I know a lot of people say the same, so I'm glad it's very short and simple.
Yes. In fact, there's something ironic about a long, long book about procrastination. Who is going to read it? Yeah.
Yeah. So it's very good. It's very symbolic to it's a short one. Just, and after that it's very, it's an actionable book. So we just can just, use it at any time. So that's a good start.
Well, thank you.
Well, I would like to thank you for your time.
Oh, my pleasure. It's nice to meet you, if only virtually here. The whole world's virtual now anyhow.
Yeah, that's true. Next time, maybe there's some next time, I would like to see your beautiful house in Canada behind you, but maybe next time.
Certainly. I've had Dutch colleagues after some of the conferences come here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I wanted to do my last sabbatical in Leiden.
Oh.
Joel Anderson, who I've mentioned, is a good friend.
Yeah.
And I wanted to go spend time with him. I've spent time with him in Leiden and then up to Utrecht. And I love the Netherlands because I like to cycle. So, of course,
it's the
home of the bicycle.
Cycle, yes. Yeah. You're more than welcome.
Yeah. Nick. Well, I'll be back for sure.
Okay.
We're just waiting for COVID to make the world safe again. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's hope so. And I hope you feel better soon. And again, thank you very much.
It's my pleasure, Fief. Take care.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks for joining me today. If you'd like to hear more about me and the Max, go to themax.partners and don't forget to subscribe so you won't miss an episode.